Calling All Cars, a copyrighted program created by the Rio Grande Oil Company.
Oakland police calling all cars, attention all cars, wanted for murder. A man described as follows. Medium build, has black hair, blue eyes.
If you are an average motorist, you will drive your car approximately 10,000 miles during 1937.
Police cars of Los Angeles will each travel 80,000 miles during 1937.
Any kind of gasoline will get you over 10,000 miles if you buy enough of it, but
any kind of gasoline will not give you the remarkable performance police cars get. Rio Grande Cracked is the gasoline of police car performance. Los Angeles police cars have used it exclusively year after year.
This is likewise true of Oakland, Berkeley, Fresno, Santa Barbara, San Diego, Orange County, San Diego County, Maricopa County, Arizona, and many, many other cities and counties.
Yes, more police cars, fire engines, ambulances, and other emergency equipment use Rio Grande cracked gasoline wherever it is sold than any other brand. This is because it is cracked into tiny atoms by the famous patented Sinclair cracking process. These broken up atoms burn more readily and more completely. You get quicker starting and greater power, just as police cars do. And you need less Rio Grande cracked gasoline to travel 10,000 miles. Don't be satisfied during 1937 with slow-burning, sluggish gasoline. Make it a year of flashing police car performance. Start tomorrow using Rio Grande cracked gasoline. Ask your nearest independent Rio Grande dealer. It is our pleasure at this time to present once again Chief Bodie Wallman of the Oakland Police Department, who will speak to you from our studios at KSFO in San Francisco. Chief Wallman.
Good evening. Tonight, Calling All Cars brings you another story from the files of the Oakland Police Department. A story of one more individual who thought that he could commit a crime and get away with it. That he was wrong, you will hear for yourself a little later. Right now, I would like to point out how vitally important it is for you, as citizens, to cooperate with your police force in every way. A great many people have the idea that a policeman is just a man with a badge who stands on the corner lying in wait to give you a ticket for parking. A man who has nothing better to do than to direct you to the curb when you violate some traffic law and give you a citation to appear in court. And you don't like it. You feel angry about it. But if you'll stop and reflect, didn't you feel just the same way about your instructor in school? Yet now that you're out of school, you realize your lessons were very valuable after all. The point that I'm trying to bring out tonight is the policeman is a person who dedicates his life to advise and protect you. When he stops, questions, or arrests you, it's because you're doing something that may endanger your own life or property or that of someone else's life, limb, or property. He is performing his sworn duty as a peace officer. So when you think of the police, think of them not as your enemies, but as your friends. In closing, may I say, good night, and a happy and prosperous new year to all.
It is an exceptionally warm day in September 1934. Patrolman O'Brien of the Oakland Police Department, detailed to the city park, walks a leisurely beat along the edge of a small pool filled with water lilies. To his way of thinking, this is the perfect day. Warm, clear, nothing to worry about, more than keeping people off the grass. But as he rounds a turn in the winding park pathway, he hears a strangely discordant note. The sound of a child sobbing. His curiosity aroused, Patrolman O'Brien decides to investigate.
Here now. What's all this crying about, young fella? Now, hold on a minute. This is no way for a big lad like you to be carrying on. Where's your mother? You don't know? Then you must be lost, is that it? Well, now, come on now. You'll never find him this way. Now, I'll tell you what. You be after stopping that crying there, and I'll take you to look for your daddy. He'll probably be around here somewhere.
No, he went away.
Well, nevertheless, I think we can find him, all right. That is, if you'll stop that crying and help me look for him.
That's
fine. Hey, here, is that any way to act? You say all right, and then listen to you. Now, wait a minute here. Hey, what's this on your back?
I don't know.
Well, for the love of a note. Pinned down here with a safety pin. Now, hold still here, young fella, till I get this off and see what it says.
My daddy put fire.
Oh, he did, eh? Ronald Tanner, 2326 Telville Road. Is that your name? Ronald? And your daddy pinned us on and he went away. Well, I'll tell you what I'd better do, Ronald. I think we'll take a walk over here to the patrol box and phone the sergeant about this. Maybe he can help find your daddy. How's that?
Why?
All right, good enough. And if the sergeant says so, maybe you'll get a ride in a police car. Now, how'd you like that? All right, then. Dry your eyes and let's get going.
Why? I will.
And as a result of the phone call, little Ronald does get a ride in a police car. Driving him to the address found on him, the radio car officers, finding no one home, decide to leave him in the yard, where his parents will find him upon the return home. Then, after reporting into the station, they resume their patrol. Late the same afternoon, George Soderbergh, a reporter on the Oakland Tribune, and his photographer companion Edward Rogers, hearing of the lost child incident, decide to go out to the Telville Road address and get a human interest yarn. But when they arrive there, they are met with a strange scene. Three small children huddled on the front porch, a girl of 11, a boy of about 6, and little Ronald, the reason for their being there.
Looks like a reception committee, Ed.
Yeah, maybe the other two heard we were going to shoot pictures and hurried over.
Always the cynic, aren't you, son?
Why not?
Maybe you got something there at that. Come on, let's see what the huddle's about.
Okay.
What do you want?
Where are your parents?
I don't know.
Is this little Ronald?
Yes. How did you know his name?
Well, I'll tell you what. If I tell you how I knew Ronald's name, can we shoot a picture of him?
What for?
For the papers.
Oh. Well, could you tell me where Mommy or Daddy are?
Oh, I'm afraid not. You see, that's what we came out here for. To see them and to get a story about Ronald having been lost in the park.
Lost in the park? When?
Today. He was found there with a note pinned on him with his name and address on it. That's how we came to know about it.
Well, but where's Mommy then? Or Daddy?
This is beginning to sound like a Chinese puzzle, George.
You said it. Look, little girl, who are you?
Francis Tanner. Ronald's my little brother.
And this little man is your brother, too?
Mm-hmm. That's Bobby.
Now, maybe you'd better tell us where you came from this afternoon.
The movie. Daddy came to school, and he gave me 50 cents and told me to take Bobby to a show. He said he didn't want us to come home for lunch either, to get it at school.
So you went to a movie, and then what happened?
Well, we came home and found Ronald here in the yard all alone. He was crying.
Well, what was he crying about?
Daddy, go away.
Oh, he talks.
What did you expect, a sign language?
I found a note on the door, but it didn't say where Mummy was.
Have you got it?
Yes, sir. It's still on the door there.
Now, wait a minute till I see what it says. Gone for the day. That's a great help. Gone for the day. Something we didn't know. Look, Ed, I think we'd better see if we can get into the house and take a look around. It's getting too cold outside for these kids anyway.
All right with me. It's too cold for even a photographer.
Would you help us get in?
We'll do our best, young lady. You just try to keep Ronald under control, and Mr. Rogers and I will show you the tricks of housebreaking. Right, Edward?
Correct.
Now, the first thing to do is to try the door. See if it's locked, you know.
Which I takes it is.
Right. Now, if I were a fireman, I might be tempted to use an axe on the door, but not being a fireman, I won't.
Look, George, what would you think about skipping the narrative and just sort of getting in the house, huh?
Oh, you don't like my little lecture.
No, I don't.
All right. I'm not so fond of it myself. Come on, let's look around and try the back door. If it's locked, then I think we might be justified in removing it from its hinges.
Yeah, sure. Anything you say. Only will you stop sounding like a reporter trying to write a novel and get underway, I'm beginning to turn to ice.
Accordingly, the two men, accompanied by three small figures, make a complete journey around the house, trying windows, doors, anything that might afford a means of entrance. And finally, as a last resort, they decide to unhinge the back door.
That's got it. Set it down over here.
Now, let's see what we can do about making the place warm.
I know where the lights turn on, mister.
Good. Supposing you go in and turn them on.
Sure. Wait a second.
I got a funny idea. These kids are on the raw end of a family walkout.
That's because you're a reporter. Probably find they took a drive and had a flat tire or something. Matter of fact, we'll probably get shot as burglars.
There they are. You can come in now.
Okay. Thanks. Come on, Ed.
Say, what in the name of all this?
Hold it, Ed. Is this the way your house always looks?
Oh, no, sir. I never saw everything all upset like this. My mummy kept it neat always.
Well, look, you better stay back here with your brothers while we take a look in the front room.
Why?
I'll tell you later. Will you do that for me now?
Well, all right.
Come on, Ed.
Phew.
Exactly.
Will you look at the furniture? All shoved around. Looks like an earthquake had struck.
Only, unless I miss my guess considerably, it wasn't an earthquake that did this.
Say, what are you driving at, George?
I got a funny feeling there's been a sweet battle of some sort in here. And I've had that feeling ever since we stepped in the house. Something screwy in Denmark.
Think we ought to call the police?
Yeah. We better do that first thing and then take a good look around. And listen, Ed, we've got to keep those kids out of here. I may be all wet, but then just in case I'm not.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Let's call the station.
Hurrying to the nearest phone, news photographer Rogers contacts Chief Wallman of the Oakland Police, tells him of their discovery, and a short time later, police inspectors Evans and Summers arrive at the Telville Road address, are met by Soderberg and Rogers, who, while waiting, have uncovered some interesting things.
When we called you, Inspector, it was only on a hunch because of the furniture's condition and all. But since then, I've looked around, and now I'm sure something's wrong. Well, in the first place, there were about three places here on the floor where someone had tried to remove some kind of stains with a wet cloth. See?
Not a very thorough job of cleaning.
That's what I thought.
Probably whoever did it was in a hurry.
Yeah. Now, here's the baby that made me sure of everything.
Steel pipe. Just about right for a blackjack.
And if you look closely, I think you can see some dried blood on the end there.
Yeah, sure looks like it, all right.
Now, if you're satisfied that someone's been hurt around here, I'll tell you why I think it's a murder.
Murder?
Yeah, murder. Come here. Over here by the bed. You see what's behind it?
Sure. Small closet.
Unless my education's been sadly neglected. Closets aren't usually nailed shut, and this one is. With two nice new shiny nails.
Hey, did you push this bed up against the door, or was it that way?
It was just like it is now. Shoved up tight against the closet.
Well, it looks like the thing to do now would be to look inside and see what's there.
Right.
I got a claw hammer. Dug it up so to have it ready when you arrive.
Good. Let's have it.
Here you are.
You better push that bed out of the way so we can get at it.
Yeah.
All right, I'll take a hold here. Push it now.
That's all right.
Yeah.
I can get at these nails now.
I'm just as bad as the kids over the neighbor's house.
Yeah.
That's got it. Now. Good Lord.
It's a woman.
You mean it was a woman?
Hasn't been very long since she was killed either. Summers, you better get her a phone. Get an ambulance out here. And tell Chief Wellman about this.
Right.
Come on, Soderberg. If you show me where those kids are, I want to talk to them.
And after a brief talk with the Tanner girl, interrupted at intervals by Ronald's repeated message about his daddy going away, Evans and Soderberg feel certain that the person responsible for the vicious slaying can be no other than the children's father, Lewis Tanner. Armed with this theory, Evans and Summers closet themselves with Chief Wallman. Explain the reasons for it.
As far as I can see, Chief, everything fits perfectly. The kid Ronald being left in the park by his father, the other two kids being told not to come home and given 50 cents. Everything points to this Tanner as the one we want.
Yeah, sounds logical enough.
Now, even the time element works out right. If Tanner did it, he wouldn't want his kid around, so he makes certain that they stay at school for lunch and go to a movie after school in the afternoon. And Ronald, that's the youngest one, Ronald, he leaves out in the yard while he does the job inside. Then he cleans up in a hurry, grabs Ronald, and takes him to the park where he pins a note on him and beats it.
All right, boys, you've done a good job of reconstruction. Now, all we've got to do is to find Tanner. You got any ideas along that line?
Not yet, Chief.
And the first thing you'd better do is to check the files and see if he has a past record. Meanwhile, I'm going to have Inspector Goodnight check with every police bureau for the same thing. If we don't get anything that way, we'll have to start from scratch, and that means plenty of work.
Thus, within 12 hours of the crime, every available bit of police machinery is set into motion. Every police identification bureau in the United States notified to check for a record. And in less than 36 hours, Chief Wallman begins to get results.
Oakland Police, regarding a bulletin number 25543, Lewis Tanner arrested here in November 1912 as stowaway. Fine £5 or 7 days. This is the only record we have. New Zealand Police.
Oakland Police, find record in our files on one Lewis Tanner as follows. December 1912, arrested here as stowaway. Found £10 or 4 weeks of hard labor. Took 4 weeks. It's the only record we have of him under that name. Newcastle Police.
I found a record on Tanner, Chief Wallman. Pretty well cinches our theory, too.
Good. What is it?
On August 8th of this year, he tried to attack his wife with a butcher knife, and she had him thrown in jail here. Then she changed her mind, got him out on bail, and he forfeited it. That was only last month.
So she gets him out on bail, and he turns around and murders her. Nice business.
We've got a good description of him on the booking slip.
Splendid.
Tim. Yes, sir?
Get Tanner's description from the files and have circulars printed and sent out to every possible point.
Yes, sir.
Also, you'd better teletype the description to every police station and ask the heads to issue it to every one of their men with orders to arrest and hold for us if located.
So, with a full description of the wanted man and a thin lead as to his habits, Chief Wallman issues precise orders to his assistants. Keeps the manhunt running smoothly, efficiently. Out to every police substation, to every sheriff's office in the country, goes a circular reading...
Wanted for murder, Lewis Tanner. 51 years of age, medium build, black hair, blue eyes, weight approximately 150. If found, arrest, hold, and notify Oakland Police immediately.
And at the Oakland harbor front, Inspectors Evans and Summers with a squad of picked men mingle with a crowd of sailors, laborers, stevedores. Keep an alert watch for a sign of their quarry, wife killer Lewis Tanner.
About as much chance of spotting him in this mob as of having him walk in and give himself up.
Yeah, especially when he knows we'd be looking for him by now, and he's probably disguised himself in some way.
Well, doesn't do any harm to look around. Might get lucky all of a sudden.
You mean just to be different, eh?
Something like that.
Say, what did they do with the kids?
Took them over to the juvenile hall. I guess that's where they'll have to stay for a while. They're all too young to take care of themselves.
That's a tough start for a kid. Mother murdered and their father put away for doing it. That is, providing we catch him, I mean.
Yeah.
It beats me how anyone could be such a heel as to do a thing like that.
People don't think about those things when they get the idea to murder someone.
Yeah, well, maybe they don't then. But I'll bet they think about it plenty later on.
Well, it isn't going to do any good to anybody to talk about it now. The kids will get the best of everything up there, and that's about the only thing anybody can do for them.
Yeah, well, I guess it's a pretty tough break to start out with just the same.
Hey, listen, I've got a hunch we're wasting our time here. Let's leave the boys to cover the harbor, and you and I take a run up to that WPA camp that the little girl told us her father worked at.
Hey, listen, you don't think he'd be nuts enough to go back there, do you?
No, only I'd like to see what the foreman of the place knows about him. Come on, let's get out of here.
Yes, sir. You was looking for me.
If you're the foreman of this camp, we are.
Well, you come to the right person, all right. My name's Harvey.
Inspector Evans of the Oakland Police, Mr. Harvey. This is Inspector Summers.
What's the matter? Something wrong? Priests don't usually pay calls on this camp.
Oh, we're just checking up on a man who works for you, Lewis Tanner. You know him?
Tanner? Sure. Know him, all right.
Well, he isn't around here today, is he?
Nope. Matter of fact, he didn't show up at all this morning. Funny, too, on account of he's... Most of the time right here on the job. He must be sick or something.
Well, now, that's too bad. We sort of hoped to have a little chat with him. But of course, if he's sick, Well, I guess we'll have to make it another time.
He wasn't looking for him for any particular reason, was he?
No, just wanted to talk to him. But if he shows up, you might give us a call at the police station. Just say that Tanner's back to work, and we'll get the message.
Sure, sure, sure thing. I imagine he'll be back tomorrow or so.
Fine. And incidentally, you don't have to mention the fact that we were here. Yeah. That is, in case he does come back.
Yeah.
We want to surprise him. That right, Summers?
Huh? Oh, sure. Yeah, that's right. Surprise him.
Well, I'll let you know when he comes back.
That's fine. Come on, yeah. Summers. Let's get back to town.
Well, so long. Come back sometime when I can show you the place. Doing lots of work here, yes, sir.
Hey, what's the idea of playing games with that old bird, Evans? Telling him that we didn't want Tanner for any particular reason.
Just an idea. Thought maybe if we kept him in the dark, he might possibly know where Tanner was and let us know.
Oh.
You can never tell when people are going to do funny things. However, I don't think anything will come of this trip. Come on, let's shove off.
Okay, what's stopping us?
So it goes, hour after hour, place after place, and no sign is found of the missing killer. Suspects are picked up by alert policemen in every city, questioned, turned loose again when they have proved their identity. Hours stretch on into the beginning of the second day. Each tiny lead is run down before being discarded. And as the second day gives way to night, Lewis Tanner is still at large. All that night and the following week, outbound ships are searched from stem to stern for stowaways, answering the description of the hunted man. And although many ships divulge a human cargo for inspection, Tanner is not among any of them. It is nearly 2 years later. In Oakland, the once indignant citizens have forgotten the brutal Tanner slaying. Newspapers have long since switched the focus to their attentions to other things, to the news of the day. Only the Oakland police force still remember the crime and continue their efforts towards finding their man. Efforts that begin to seem futile as the months drag by. And in Seattle, Washington, Eddie Swanson, 13-year-old Fisher youth and a young companion, trudge wearily along a windswept street, coats buttoned high against the bite of a bitter cold February night, their thoughts running to the far-off summer and more fishing. As they round the corner near Eddie's home, they pass one of the many straggling lines of human derelicts waiting for a free handout from the red line. In the glare from an overhead street lamp, haggard faces reflect their owner's thoughts. Eyes stare ahead at nothing. Fascinated by the sight, Eddie scans each face in turn, his 13-year-old imagination painting multicolored pictures in his mind. Suddenly he stops, gazes for an instant at a face that seemed vaguely familiar, tries to place it. Failing to do so, he resumes his walking and a few blocks later reaches his own home. As he starts in the door, his memory suddenly flashes a message, galvanizes his body into instant action.
That you, Eddie?
Yes, I'm can't stop now.
What on earth are you running so for?
Got something important to see about up in my room. Oh, now where did I put him? Oh, I remember. Oh, in here somewhere. Can't remember which one the picture was
in. What on earth are you up to? First you run in like a madman, and now I find you practically tearing those old magazines to pieces.
I'm in an awful hurry, Mom. Gotta look through these fast. I think I saw a fella at a police force.
Oh, nonsense. You're always thinking something of the sort. Now put those silly things away and get ready for dinner.
Here, I got it. I got the right one, Mom.
Well, you don't have to get so excited about it.
I'll be back later, Mom. Gotta go now.
But your dinner is almost ready. You can.
I can't help it. I gotta get to the police station fast. So long.
And in less than 5 minutes at the police station...
Hurry up. I got a man you're looking for.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Take it easy, son. You'll bust if you aren't careful.
Yeah, I know, but this fella's standing in a bread line. And if you don't hurry and get there fast, you'll be gone again.
Let me see that picture you got there.
Sure, here you are. I had it in a detective magazine.
Wanted for murder. You sure this is the man you saw?
Of course I am. I wouldn't forget a face that easy.
All right, son. Show me the man in the bread line. I'll take a chance on your being right.
Oh, don't worry. Sure, I'm right. You see, I'm a detective, too.
Oh.
Only not like you. I haven't got a badge.
Well, if this is the right man, we'll see what we can do about that. Come on, let's go.
Following Eddie Swanson, amateur sleuth, Captain Yoris finds himself running through the windswept streets, wondering if perhaps he isn't the victim of a youthful prank. But at last, they reach the bread line. And after a moment's hesitation, Eddie points a thin finger at one man, then points back to the picture.
You see?
Yeah, I see all right.
Well, was I wrong?
Oh, far from it, son. You've hit it right on the nose. Now listen to me carefully.
I want you to stay right here in the shadows. When I walk up to this man, watch what happens. And if anything goes wrong, you beat it back as fast as your legs will carry him to the station and tell the sergeant. Understand?
Yes, sir. You think he might try to get away?
Well, I think there's a very good chance of it. So you stay over here. Now, those are orders. Understand?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And here goes. All right, Tanner, put out your hands.
What?
You heard me. Stick out your hands and make a pass.
Hey, wait a minute, mister. I guess you're a cop from the looks of you, but you haven't got anything on me. There's nothing to make me stick my hands out.
Listen, Tanner, I'm telling you once more to stick out your hands and be quiet. And this is the last time I'm going to.
Okay. What have I got to worry about anyway? You can't frame anything on me.
I don't have to. You've already framed yourself. Now, are you going to walk back to the station quietly with me, or do I have to drag you? Suit yourself.
I'll walk.
Good. That's the first smart thing you've done yet. Come on.
But once back in Captain Yorse's office, the man denies all knowledge of the crime, denies his name is Tanner, denies him everything, and Captain Yorse continues to throw questions at him.
Well, if your name isn't Tanner and you're not from Oakland, then who are
you? That doesn't make any difference. My name's not Tanner.
How do you explain this picture of you in a detective magazine?
I don't.
How do you explain this bulletin I found in our files with a description of you in it marked wanted for murder?
That's not me.
How long do you think you can get away with this bluff, Tanner?
I'm not bluffing.
Then what's your name and where do you live?
I don't know. I can't think with all these questions.
You don't have to think to tell me.
I don't.
You don't if you're lying.
I don't.
You don't what?
I don't remember.
Your name is Tanner, isn't it?
Yes. No, it's not.
It's Tanner. Lewis Tanner. And you murdered your wife and left your three kids deserted in Oakland, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I can't stand any more questions. I had her with a piece of pipe. I'm sorry I couldn't help it. I had to kill her.
Lewis Tanner was returned to Oakland, where he signed a full confession of the brutal crime. And on April 22nd, 1936, he was convicted of murder by a jury of seven men and women. 2 weeks later, Judge Frank M. Ogden of Alameda County sentenced him to the death penalty. An appeal to the California Supreme Court was denied in October, sealing the death warrant for Lewis Tanner, murderer. And Eddie Swanson, the 13-year-old boy responsible for the arrest, was awarded the sum of $100 for his alertness. So ends the case of Oakland's heinous murder. No matter what the age or make of your motor car, it deserves efficient lubrication. Resolve to give it the finest you can buy during 1937. Resolve to use only Sinclair motor oils and greases. Go to your nearest independent Rio Grande dealer and ask for Sinclair Pennsylvania or Sinclair Opaline, two of the most completely de-waxed, de-jellied motor oils you can buy. And if you haven't tried Rio Grande cracked gasoline, you have a pleasant surprise in store for you. This quicker starting, faster accelerating, greater mileage gasoline will give you a new conception of performance, police car performance. That flashing type of performance the police cars, fire engines, and ambulances of Los Angeles, Oakland, and many, many other cities and counties get in their emergency equipment. Important changes in Calling All Cars radio schedules are explained in Calling All Cars News. Get a free copy tomorrow from your independent Rio Grande dealer.
Police calling all cars. Attention all cars. Cancellation broadcast 162. Regarding a man wanted for murder. Suspect in this case and now in custody. That's all.
Narrator Frederick Lindsley, bidding you good night for the Rio Grande Oil Company, wishing you all happiness and prosperity throughout 1937.